Welcome to CanTalk 2.0, a podcast by the Goethe Institute Cyprus on the occasion of 300 years since the birth of Immanuel Kant. I am Dr. Christos Hadjioannou, academic philosopher and the host of this podcast, and in the company of Hambis Damianou, stand-up comedian.
Hello.
We will be looking at Kant's work in today's context. Kant's work is considered to be the pinnacle of the philosophy of the Enlightenment. In each episode, we are joined by international guest experts on Kant to ask them what Kant would think about specific situations and examples from today, from artificial intelligence to lying on dating apps. What is it like to look at his ideas from almost 300 years ago through the lens of today? What can we learn from him today? In today's episode, I Want to Break Free, we will be talking about Kant's concepts of freedom and autonomy. So, Hambis, you had a couple of questions on this topic, am I right?
Yes, I have a few. Hi, everyone. I'm Hambis. I'm a stand-up comedian based in Cyprus, and I'm very interested in how Kant's philosophy is still relevant today. So, when I was younger, a few friends of mine and I used to discuss deep topics late at night until we fell asleep, I mean. One day, we were talking about laws and anarchy. We would drink beers and argue that laws are human-made. Nature has its own laws. So I came up with a thought, experiment for them, according to which a family lives in the forest, right? Has a house which the family built themselves. They wear clothes that they made, and they eat what they grow. They have neither IDs or passports, and they have no contact with any other civilization. All my friends agreed that the family is fine as it is, and it should be left alone to live their lives freely and as they choose, okay? Then I asked them a crucial question. What if the father of the family kills one child? There was silence, and everyone started thinking. 2 minutes later, we found ourselves arguing and fighting about whether authorities should intervene or let them be, let them live according to the nature laws that they chose. But then the question is, did the children have a real choice? I mean, were they really living according to their own choices? I then fell asleep and the discussion was over, leaving my friends annoyed with me as always, which explains why I have no friends anymore. I don't know. Anyway. My question is, does absolute freedom exist or only a limited kind of freedom? Can someone be really free? What would Kant have to say on this?
Okay. Very interesting questions and complex. I mean, you raise various issues here, some of which I don't think we'll be able to address. We'll probably have to leave them for another episode. For example, your question indirectly touches upon the distinction between natural law and legal positivism. I mean, these are two opposing legal theories about the foundations of law. According to natural law moral theory, the moral standards that govern human behavior derive from the nature of human beings. They are inherent in human nature, and they are universal and unchanging, and they can be understood through reason. Legal positivism, on the other hand, holds that laws are created by human beings, and these are rules that are not necessarily connected to moral principles or to human nature, but rather they are like a different autonomous system altogether. But this question about legal theory is tangential to the question about freedom to do whatever we like, which is the real question
here.
So let me start first by reminding that in the previous episode, we talked about how one of Kant's priorities in his philosophy was to find a way to articulate how morality is possible in a world of nature that is determined by mechanistic laws that leave no room for freedom. I mean, freedom is crucial because without freedom, we cannot ascribe responsibility to anyone. We cannot talk about morality. if you are free to choose between at least two options, real options, on how to act, then it means that you couldn't have done otherwise, which means you are not responsible for your action.
Okay.
And there is no room for morality. In the Critique of Pure Reason, Kant argues that freedom is incompatible with nature. That is, we cannot have both nature and freedom, because nature is governed by mechanistic laws where everything is determined without choice. So nature means determinism. So how does Kant solve this problem then? How can he argue about the existence of freedom, and where would he base this freedom? I've asked the Kant expert, Professor Dieter Schönecke, who is professor of practical philosophy at the University of Siegen in Germany, to help us out with this question.
Kant believes that morality presupposes freedom. In this sense, Kant is what is nowadays called an incompatibilist. If all there is nature and its laws, then morality is impossible. Morality presupposes freedom, these people say, and freedom and determinism are incompatible. At the same time, however, Kant is a compatibilist. Nature and freedom are compatible inasmuch the realm of nature is the realm of appearances, whereas the realm of freedom is the realm of things in themselves. The upshot of the first critique is that the laws by which we describe nature are limited to things as appearances only. Thus, freedom is possible.
So, the way Kant solves this problem is by arguing that while indeed freedom and nature cannot go together, nature itself, the way we understand nature, is not all there is. It does not exhaust reality. It is not how things are in themselves, but rather it is how the world appears to us. And this means that there is still room for freedom in the world that does not appear to us through the senses, because the laws of nature do not extend beyond the appearances, which that beyond is the realm of freedom.
Okay, but does this then mean that for Kant, freedom means to be free from every determination, free from any nature law whatsoever, pure spontaneity?
Well, that depends on the context. In the Critique of Pure Reason, Kant discusses freedom as absolute spontaneity, that is, as the power to act completely out of oneself without any preceding determining causal factors. He also relates freedom as the ability to act from hypothetical imperatives. Such imperatives tell me what it is rationally to do to achieve a certain end, say to practice piano playing if one wants to play the piano, but they don't tell me to pursue the end. So they don't tell me to pursue, say, playing the piano. However, as of his first major book on moral philosophy, The Groundwork of the Metaphysics of Morals, Kant identifies the positive element of freedom with autonomy. And negatively speaking, freedom is a person's independence of any preceding determining causal factors. But if I am not determined by such factors, I must be determined by something else, and this, Kant says, is self-determination by the moral law, that is, autonomy. This is why, as Kant puts it in the Groundwork, quote, a free will and a will under moral laws are one and the same, end quote.
Right. So, ultimately, the type of freedom that Kant defends is not a type of freedom in the sense that human beings can be completely spontaneous in the sense of unpredictable, but they are autonomous, which means their behavior is determined in accordance with the moral law as opposed to the laws of nature. It's good to remember here that the word autonomy derives from the word auto, which means self, and nomos, which means law. And so it is a version of freedom that means like a self-legislation, a concept that involves being governed by rules that you yourself carry within you. So Is the existence of freedom in the sense of autonomy something that remains possible since we don't really know how things are in themselves? Or is freedom a reality for Kant? Do we know if it is real?
Freedom is not only possible, but a reality we know by the validity of the moral law, the categorical imperative. This imperative tells us what to do. It is about the fact that we ought to do something. But ought implies can, and this can is exactly what freedom is.
Right. So, going back to your opening questions, Hambis, you asked about whether freedom has limits.
Yes.
So, the way I understand Kant, his argument is that autonomy is a type of freedom that is real, but it is not arbitrary. Rather, it is tied to the moral law, and so it has its own kind of lawfulness. And since we know that for Kant, the moral law, the categorical imperative that we mentioned in more detail in the previous episode, is intrinsically tied to reason, then autonomy must be connected to reason. I've asked Professor Schönecker about the connection between freedom and reason, and this is what he had to say.
Well, autonomy means literally self-determination by one's own laws. These are the moral laws, and the faculty that gives these laws is reason. Thus, autonomy is the self-determination by one's own reason. In this sense, Kantian autonomy is quite different from what people nowadays think about autonomy. It is often assumed that autonomy is the right to do whatever you see fit or what pleases you. But that is not Kant's idea. Ethical autonomy really is self-limitation. It's about laws, not about independence, or at least not about independence only.
So I guess, Hampis, this helps us to answer two of the questions you posed. One of your questions was about freedom in nature and outside of civilization. I guess Kant's answer, based on what we said up to now, would be this. So if this family you described that lives in the so-called wild nature has developed behavior that is only determined by natural instincts and biological needs, then Kant would say that they are not free in any sense of the word. They are neither free in the naive sense of being spontaneous and arbitrary, since their behavior is determined by instincts, nor are they free in the sense of autonomous. If, on the other hand, they have developed a form of culture that is, say, organized around irrational rules that go against the moral law and against the categorical imperative, let's say they are idiosyncratic irrational rules that also cannot be universalized, then again, Kant would say that this family is not realizing its potential to become autonomous, since autonomy is necessarily tied to universalizable rational moral laws.
So I have another question here, but I want to state it with an example. I'm not going to ask about the lines in comedy or in arts or the in terms of freedom of speech. Yeah? So I'm going to ask about a post in a social media platform. Let's say I post some. I'm a comedian, right? So if I post a joke, it is a joke, okay? I post a joke in Twitter or X or Facebook, whatever.
Like, you know, a public post, that this is a stand-up comedy setting.
I'm going to post a joke on social media. And let's say the joke is insulting someone. Let's say it's a really bad joke. Okay. Where does the line stand in terms of freedom of speech? Am I free to post it?
Freedom of speech is a consequence of what Kant calls the only innate right, that is, the right, that is, freedom, as the independence from being restrained by other people. So I am also free to say or write what I think is true. Note, however, that freedom as the independence from being restrained by other people has a presupposition. it must, as Kant puts it, coexist with the freedom of every other in accordance with the categorical imperative. So there are moral limits to freedom of speech. In my speech, I must not, for instance, insult other people. And this, of course, is also true for what I say or write on social media. Nonetheless, Kant most certainly would be a strong opponent of what at the time being is called cancel culture. Cancel culture is the attempt to curtail other people's right to free speech on the basis of alleged moral limits. Now, it is true, as mentioned before, that there are moral limits to free speech. In this sense, it is true that, say, racism, sexism, or transphobia are not protected by free speech. This, however, is not the problem. The problem with cancel culture is that woke activists hold inflated or exaggerated ideas of what those terms mean. For instance, it is a widely held and indeed the standard position in biology that there are, biologically speaking, only two sexes, not more. And yet such a claim, there are only two sexes, is demonized as transphobe, which is simply absurd. Or to use another example, there are still biologists and philosophers who argue that for taxological reasons, the concept of a human race is still useful. And yet, such a claim is demonized as a racist, even though that descriptive claim is not racist at all. It would only be racist if one were to say that there are morally relevant differences between human races, such that one race is more valuable than the other, which of course is nonsense. By the way, Kant opposes quite strictly a right to civil obedience. All the more, he argues, it is important that people have a strong right to free speech to express their discontent with political affairs.
Of course, the phenomenon of transphobia, as well as the phenomenon of cancel culture, are complex and highly controversial topics that would need separate episodes in order to be addressed. I mean, for example, something that comes to my mind is that some people weaponize the standard biological view about the two sexes in order to make morally charged statements that in practice amount to transphobia. So they're like concealed moral statements. But as I said, this is a topic that would require an episode in itself. Well, Hambis, yeah. I hope you got some answers.
I might have to find some friends and flex my new, you know,
learned. Knowledge.
Yeah, I know everything now. I'm closer to Kant. Or not. We'll see.
Well, I am Dr. Christos Hadjioannou.
And I am Hambis Damianou.
Thank you for listening to Kant Talk 2.0 and for joining us as we try to answer the question, what would Kant say about freedom and autonomy?